Okay, welcome to History Through Art, week 3 for the American History Program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We begin looking at a new work of art, and I have two prefatory remarks concerning our project today. One of them is that the History Through Art selfie contest will continue through the year. So if you didn't get a chance to submit a selfie, you have as many opportunities as there are paintings. In fact, you can go ahead and do any painting you want, put yourself in it and send it off. But as far as this class is concerned, there are a variety of selfies that you can undertake. And so I'll try to remind you of those things. And I'm going to post an official announcement on the class webpage so that you can have an exact idea. I still have to figure out what the prizes are going to be in the different categories and stuff. But we will, you know, I will definitely generate a decent, worthwhile contest above and beyond just the fun of doing the History Through Art selfies and the value of it, which we'll discuss again when we get to the actual selfies for this class and for this particular painting that we're going to do. Let me now make a remark about the painting and about where we are headed in the story of American history. We are closing in on the understanding that we need, the understanding of the world around us that we need in order to go out into history without getting lost there. In other words, when you go and you study the past, as I've said before, it's very common, and there's the most common thing in the world, for people to study the past and to get lost there when they are studying it. And for them to engage in a study that essentially has nothing to do with life in the present. And that I don't agree with. And so I think that that is a waste of time and bad for you, in fact, to conceive of the past as being disconnected from the present, when in fact it is connected, and there is a tremendous value to be gained from studying history properly. So I definitely think that it's crucial when you study the past that you go back into the past with the proper perspective, which means that you are focused on the present and that you are trying to understand the world that you live in. So we're working on that. We're getting ourselves into a position to understand this globalized, interconnected, America-centric world and what that all amounts to so that we have the right mindset as we go into the past. Now, part of having the right mindset also is having an awareness of what life was like before America. So American history is about America primarily, and how it came about, what happened over the course of its history, and so on. But there's a really crucial story about mankind and about the things that came immediately before America that are really important to understand. Because what those do, being aware of those things, helps us to appreciate what is so special about America. And what is so unique, what is so important about it, and how, indeed, how revolutionary the United States was in its founding principles, and how special, and then we can look around us today and think about how different it is today, or not different, and so on, and that is part of developing an awareness of the significance of American history and of America in the world. So we're going to do that. We're going to do it in history, and we're going to do it in history through art. We're going to try to better understand the world before and around America as well. That's the context for the story of America. And so we need to understand that. And we are now going to engage in a project of history through art that has that as its purpose partly. So here we go. I'm going to share my desktop with you and go ahead and let you absorb this painting and tell me what your reaction is. All right, so whenever you're ready, go ahead and raise your hand. I need to do one thing. I need to modify the sound properties again. And I'm having trouble doing that. Oh, darn. All right, just one second. I'm going to have to stop sharing in order to perform this function, I believe. And then, oh, there we go. Just one sec. All right, I'm having trouble controlling one particular function. All right, I'm going to go back, and then we can start with our first impressions again. Sorry about that. Okay, so first impressions, good, positive, negative, neutral, whatever they may be. Sophie, please.
The minute I saw this painting, I just noticed all the very deep black shadows, sometimes even on the people.
Oh, yeah. This is a painting of deep blacks. I agree with you. I love that about this painting. It's got such deep, deep, dark blacks. I wonder how you do that, right? As an artist, how do you get such deep blacks? Assuming that this is a reasonably, true representation. Sometimes in paintings, you get amazingly bright whites. You get amazingly shiny things. And it's so amazing that artists can do it. What I agree with you that the deep blacks are a very compelling feature of this painting. Yeah, this is a painting of deep blacks. Alexander, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the first things I noticed was that there are lots of these very dark shadows, mm-hmm. and the guy in the foreground on the left has like half his body is black, and the other guy in the foreground also is wearing black clothes and is holding a blackish sword. Also, I noticed that this painting is quite, it has quite a big frame of view. So all of the people are just in the bottom half, and in the top half you can see that this is in some sort of large stone building. And also, I noticed that there are all these people here, and they don't seem very happy.
Yeah, some of them are. Okay, so that's going maybe a little bit beyond first impressions. But yes, so the painting has a certain structure that jumps out at you. The black shadows jump out at you. Okay, Bria, what about you?
Well, it looks like they're all upset about this little boy that's over here being pushed forward by this lady. This guy over here.
All right, now wait a minute. Stop. Because that's kind of analytical. If you're starting to really try to figure things out, that's no longer a first impression. Right? So the first impression would be, wow, look at that. Look at that darkness and the brightness and the darkness. Or wow, beautiful colors. Or, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? That's a first impression. So analysis is not first impression. So it's just more, what did you see? And how did it make you feel? Do we have any feelings here? Ashton, go ahead.
What I think about it is that, you notice there's a cathedral in the background, with the stained glass.
Okay.
And, other people have said there is a lot of black.
Okay. All right, so you immediately were drawn to the fact that it's inside, as you understood very readily, that it's in a cathedral. Okay, so that's a very specific location. That's something that you're immediately going to have an identification with if you're aware of what that is. And yes, a lot of dark blacks. Okay, Timothy.
This painting is very interesting.
Okay, I like that. Usually I like it when a first impression boils down to a word and a very well-chosen word. So interesting. So, people use that expression in different ways. What do you mean by it this time, Timothy?
I mean that it's not a painting that when you first look at it, you're all like, oh my gosh, this is such a beautiful painting. When you first look at this painting, it's not confused, not really confusing, but you just got like, okay then?
Mm-hmm, okay. I know what you're trying to articulate. What you're saying is, precisely, I agree with you entirely, that it's not a painting that I think most people would react to and say, how beautiful. That's not how you feel. When you look at a painting, a beautiful still life of flowers, you might say that. If you look at a painting of a beautiful woman, then you might say, oh, how beautiful she is. But you know, so there are different kind of paintings. You look at them and you think that beauty is what is being shown to you, right? You get a sense of beauty. Now, this is a beautiful painting, but that's not how we feel about it. What we feel about it is different because of the subject matter and because of the structure and complexity of the painting. So it's exactly, I agree with you entirely, Timothy, that my response to it is more interest, intrigue, questioning, a certain desire to know more, because it feels like there's, I mean, I know what it is immediately, so my experience is always a little bit difficult to parse and for me to set aside what I previously know in order to just enjoy it. But I do find that it presents an interesting interpretation, or it makes me want to know more. That's my introspection, is this painting rewards us for wanting to look at the world intently with our eyes. I always like that. One of the truths about visual art, great visual art, one of the truths about great visual art is that artists reward us for using our eyes. Artists provide us with an object that is worthy of our senses and that excite those senses and excite the mind, as we are human beings that are capable of seeing the world with these wonderful instrumentalities. And the artist celebrates that by creating an object which has qualities that sometimes are more real than real, that take our senses and manipulate them and give us a special reward for using our eyes. I feel that way in this painting. There's certain things when I look at them, I really feel rewarded, and I love it. I feel like it's so great to be able to dive into it and look. So that's what I like about this painting. I find it to be so expertly done that I appreciate. I feel immediately thankful for it. I feel immediately interested. I don't love it in the same sense that I love something that I identify with personally, but I do feel a real kinship with the artist for him creating this for me to look at. Juliet, go ahead.
I actually really like the painting.
Okay, that's totally fine. Of course it is. What do you like about it?
I don't know. I think it's like the stained glass, and mm-hmm. it's such an unusual painting that it's weird. I like it though.
Okay, so that's interesting, right? So yeah, it's always good to strive to articulate what you're feeling, because that's part of, you know, becoming better in touch with that inner world. And you should strive to identify, try to introspect, is what this is. How do I react? How do I feel? What is it that triggers the feelings? Because this is an insight into who you are. That an art can be like that. It can be a mirror that allows you to see yourself more clearly as you are trying to see an external object more clearly. Keen, please. Last up.
All right. I agree totally with Timothy and you, Mr. Powell. I had a decidedly negative reaction. I looked at it and I didn't feel, you know, I didn't really feel any happy emotion or any, not even really interest at first. I just felt it brought me down. And I think the artist, at first I was wondering if it was maybe the artist didn't mean for that to happen, but he was not particularly skilled. But then I thought, well, Mr. Powell wouldn't show us bad art. This artist knows what he's doing. And so then I started to appreciate, well, okay, that's what he was going for. And then the interest started. Now I want to know why he's doing that, what's going on.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. All right. So art is a journey. And you're right that I would never waste your time with junk. So yes, there is something here, and I got to tell you, there's a lot here. We might struggle to get it all in the first two classes. But anyway, we'll do our best. So let's talk about main characters. Is there one? Is there more than one? If so, how many? Or are there no main characters? And of course, the most important feature of your answer is Why? All right, what are your thoughts? Ashton, please.
I think that the boy is like a prince in the, you know, like in the middle, on the steps. He might be a young prince, and the woman next to him is the queen, possibly.
Okay, now that is an interpretive... Now, let me stop you there for a second, Ashton. That is an interpretive approach, which is not quite what I'm asking you to do. So in visual art, the way in which an artist crafts a scene and manipulates our sense of sight is he does things by using color, light, positioning, contrast, gesture and posture, interaction of characters, all kinds of different features whereby he says, look here. So I agree with you that the artist has told us, look here, look at this boy. Now tell me visually, how did he make us do that?
I think because most of the other characters are like darker, you know? And he's all like white and shiny.
Okay, that's one good answer. Contrast and color. So he's white and shiny, and they tend to be more subdued. They're more colorful, but by the fact that he's the only one wearing white, that sets him apart. What else, Keen?
So I think I have another thing to say, but I'll go with you because this is interesting. I think that he's forward, the light's on him. He's the only character who's in the light and also closest to the center of the painting. You know, that guy in blue who's crossing his arms, or one arm across his chest, he's in the center. He's not as well lit, so combination of lighting and placement, and yeah, I mean, I think that's about right. There's also shadows behind him, so that helps bring him forward.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In this complex image, it's rare for a character to have any position in the painting that he commands. In fact, there's no character that commands the space that the character exists in except the boy and the woman. She also commands the space. She's very imposing because she's much taller than he is. And she's extremely regal. Really, really remarkable. However, in terms of contrast, the boy is highlighted even more than she is, because the flag is here with her, and these colors kind of break up her outline, whereas this character is surrounded by darkness. Now, isn't that kind of ominous? I think that's kind of cool. Is it ominous? I don't know, but it feels a little ominous. Something ominous about this painting. The dark shadows are so dark. But yeah, the light and contrast combination is really powerful on this character. It's like a magnifying glass almost. It expands our awareness of that character. Alexander?
Well, I think that the main character is the boy in white and maybe as well the woman, but I'm more drawn to the boy in white because he has this very dark shadow behind him, and you can see his outline very clearly. While the woman, like the guy in the foreground who you can't really see very well, is kind of covering her cloak, and there's lots of stuff behind her too.
Right.
And I also think that pretty much everybody else is kind of like a secondary group, because it's not like it's just a painting about one person and everybody else is just there for the effect of there being people. I think that this painting is about the boy and the woman and the group's response.
Ooh, how interesting is that? I love that comment. And yes, I want to respond to that a little bit here, because we have this pairing in the center. Well, not center, but, you know, center left. And then we have this subgroup of characters on the painting's far left. And then we have, as you say, Alexander, this group of characters over here, very distinctive. The painting divides up very crisply into these three groups, and those dark lines, I'm going to remove those boxes for a second, because these dark spaces between the groups accentuate the divide between the groups. And yeah, and then we have this real, this almost this multitude, this kind of chaotic group over here to the right, composed of so many different characters, having so many different actions and reactions, that it's really, it's almost chaos, but it's controlled chaos. So it's very interesting how much is going on here over on the right-hand side especially. And I think it will be key to our ultimate interpretation of the painting will be that we acknowledge that the painting has two main characters, especially the boy, with the woman playing a secondary role. As the action permits, it really does indicate that. And then we have the two groups, the one on the left being far less important, and the one on the right being much more populous and more important visually, predominant and complex and interesting. And so we're going to have to look at that as a kind of other project. All right. So yeah, this painting has a lot to offer when you are looking at the characters. And just for that, just for the fun of it, I'm going to just let you guys peruse for a second. I want you to see this by zooming. Now, I've shifted the image to the right. I hope that doesn't bother anybody. It allows me to have the participant's window open in a way that is easier for me to manipulate. Okay, so that doesn't block the painting so much. So I hope that doesn't bother you with the asymmetry or anything, but let me know. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go and I'm going to invite you to look at some of the characters here because they're so neat. So look at, maybe coming back out just a bit is a good idea. Look at this guy. There's a look. The hands, the look. The arm, the look. The guy who's craning his neck to see. The guy who's yelling. Look at all these guys. This really old guy. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. They're all so different. What's going on? Why is the reaction? What about this guy? He's not even looking at the main character. What's he looking at? Then this guy, wow, he's in a totally different state of mind. And what about this prominent guy in black? He almost disappears. He's got a fascinating gesture and face and posture. Wow. Here's a really interesting guy looking sideways. Look at this guy with his hand to his chest. This guy's looking away. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. See, look. Look at that. This is so interesting. He's like, what are you doing? If this guy spends too much time talking to that guy over there, you get the feeling that this knight's going to take out his sword and lop his head off. Whoa, man, there's some interesting dynamic there. That is daggers, baby. Those eyes are daggers. These eyes are not so happy either. These are fat. Wow. Okay, so I just wanted you to see that, just, you know, in relation to, like I said, this painting gives us a lot. And so as we are trying to understand it better, there's going to be a lot of wonderful things to see. Bria, go ahead.
I noticed that when we were talking about the picture of Columbus, you're talking about how the hand to the, it was kind of like, it was on his chest. Here, it's kind of like, it's more like a gas. He's more like a gas. This man in the whitish yellow shirt. He looks like he's like, he met the queen that must have done something, or the little boy must have done something there that really upset all of these people, because you don't see smile anywhere.
Well,
not even the queen.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, but you're right. See, that's the point, is that we have a puzzle in front of us. All right, so we begin to decipher the puzzle by looking at the main character. And not surprisingly, the main character is going to be the subject of our selfie contest. Because, well, He is a child, so it's appropriate for you guys to wonder what your life would be like if you were this person, right? And part of the immersion into the painting and into the moment and part of this process of appreciation when it comes to visual art is to have this sense of being there. And it's temporary, right? We're not going into the past to lose ourselves there. We're going into the past in order to understand it better. That's all. And this immersion that we can enact by conducting a so-called history through art selfie, as Mr. Powell is calling it, can be really, really useful. We have a person. We want to know them. And what better way than to be them? To literally be this person in this moment and to try to reproduce it. So when it comes to the selfie contest, you are going to be this person and I'm going to see how well you can be them. And it's really going to involve a lot of interesting things. So if you were to try to be this person, what would you need to do? What are all the different dimensions of this person that you would need to try to reproduce? We have surface issues and surface elements, but on the other hand, we have really profound things. So we have a lot of work to do here. Alexander, go ahead.
Well, he's holding this long stick or some kind of like metal stick. It looks pretty heavy. And he's sort of leaning on it a little bit because obviously his right foot doesn't have much weight on it. And his left foot has most of the weight. So I think he's leaning on the stick a little bit. And he is holding it with this firm grip to his right.
Yes. Okay, let's focus on that here. Because if you're really going to understand this character, you've got two things that Alexander said already are really crucial. The foot placement and relating to the posture and relating to the holding of the staff. So yes, the weight here is, I would say, entirely on the left leg. And the flat foot, the upright posture, the right foot is so far back and extended with only the ball of the foot and pretty much like the big toe touching the ground. And possibly because, as you said, Alexander, the hand is gripping the staff quite tightly, possibly making it, helping him to balance a little bit. So if there is a little bit of weight on the staff, that's possible. And yeah, the staff looks pretty much like it would be metal. And that would make it pretty heavy. So yeah, that's kind of interesting. We're not here to analyze whether he can lift it or not, but, you know, or whether it's just, I don't know what, right? But it's pretty a heavy, big staff. And it's interesting also because it's his size, right? It's not a staff that a man would carry because the lady could not even carry that as a cane. She's too tall. So it's his size. There's something interesting. Okay. And so, yeah, let's continue here. So, I haven't heard from Piper yet. Piper, what do you think of this character?
I noticed the facial expression.
Yeah, tell me about that. What is this expression?
He's not smiling.
Okay, number one, he's not smiling. Okay, what else?
He just looks kind of straightforward and serious.
Is he looking... You said he looks straightforward. That's an interesting statement. In other words, as opposed to what? Straightforward as opposed to what?
As opposed to, like, looking at the lady or someone in the background.
Okay, so you mean he's looking straight ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. But the word straightforward is an interesting one because you could say he looks straightforward as opposed to perhaps complex or conniving or somebody who's hiding something, right? It seems to me that he is a very open character. He is who he is. He just happens to be there in this scene, but I don't get the sense that he's anybody else than we are looking at. And so that's what I thought you meant, but maybe you meant more that he's just kind of looking straight ahead, which is interesting feature in and of itself. Is he looking at somebody or something? Let's settle that right now. Is he looking at somebody or something? Thoughts, votes. We can go a little bit closer in. And that's too close. Okay. Is he looking at somebody or something? Timothy.
I have two possible theories. Theory number one, simple, he's not looking at anything.
Mm-hmm.
Theory number two is he's looking at the guy that the knight is also looking at, the man in green that's talking to the guy, and the boy's not really happy about that.
No, his gaze is not downward, so it doesn't fit the angle for him to be looking down. So I think his gaze is straight across, as I've overemphasized by the yellow line. Erica, please.
I think he's looking at the man in black.
Well, you see, that's one of the possibilities, is the gaze is so straight that the question is, whoops, I apologize, let me try to get the annotation back. The gaze is so straight, the question is that the object of the gaze? So is this the gaze? Or, you know, I'm not sure. I think, I wish I could manipulate this better, but I can't. So, I can erase a line and then put a new one. Is it perhaps to him? I actually think that that's more likely. Alexander?
I'm leaning towards him not looking at anything, because if you look at his face, it has a mildly wistful expression, I think. So
ooh,
he's just looking past everybody, yeah, and thinking about how everything is going to turn out or something like that. But he could be looking at someone else and just thinking about, like, what they're doing.
Yeah, let me draw it this way. That's what I agree with you, Alexander. That's always been my impression, is that he's looking basically right through that space in between those two men, not looking at anybody in particular. Keen, go ahead.
All right, so I think I agree with Alexander completely. He's not looking at anyone. I think that he's not looking at anyone because he is a small child, and if you put yourself into his place, he is in a room full of unhappy men who are all looking at him with unhappy faces, and he has this pole and his hand is gripping onto it very tightly. And if you think about yourself as him and you see all these guys around you, and your mother is pushing you forward, and you're one more step, you might be falling down those stairs, getting closer and closer to these guys. You're not wanting to look at any of these people. You're scared. You're gripping onto your pole, and you're looking just anywhere that's not at these guys. But you're trying to maintain some composure. So you're looking forward, maybe through two people, like you said, but not certainly not at anyone.
All right, that was really great. I like what you said. You're trying to maintain your composure, and I love the way that you put yourself in his shoes, because he is a child. He's small. Right? And he's in a room with a fair number of characters that seem quite imposing, unruly, difficult, maybe unapproving or disapproving, rather. This is not an easy situation. If you, as you said, King, put yourself in his shoes, which is the purpose of the selfie, I think you agree, you could do that psychologically. Putting yourself in his shoes would include that you wouldn't want to look at any of these guys. They're too much. They're too intense, and they're grown-ups. So it's not a usual thing for a child to have kind of the sense of self, the sense of presence that would allow them to look into people's eyes and to stand up there under their very intense gaze and still be kind of looking right at them. So I think you're right that he's trying to maintain his composure. It's a difficult moment. You got putting yourself in his shoes, you're on display here in a very grand setting, in a cathedral, surrounded by, we would call them the grandees, the main characters of this culture, right? And you're just a child. That is not easy. You want to follow up, Keen?
Well, there's just one more thing. It's a little bit more of a stretch, but if you zoom in on the child's face, his lower lip is pressed very tightly. You can see, like, it's his chin is puckered maybe a little bit. And the only way that would happen is if he were pressing his lips together, which suggests more, you know, he's anxious. He's not happy here, and he's trying.
Okay, to let's go.
His serene face.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go in and do that. All right. So yeah, the lips are definitely tight, and I mean, he doesn't look fearful, you know, because Piper was talking about kind of looking straight forward and. And it's, he doesn't seem to be especially afraid, but I think it is a real effort for him to be here so composed. Erica. Sorry, did you put your hand up?
No.
Okay, put your hand down then. Once you've had your hand up, you've got to put it down too. Okay. So, I wanted to highlight a couple things about his dress. Okay, his clothing. So evidently he is wearing a crown. That one is pretty straightforward. I also want to focus in on the outfit. So tell me what you see in the outfit. Can you decipher it? Yeah, it's white with gold trim and gold decorative designs on it. What are the designs? What are the designs? Keen?
There's a cross in the middle that is separating like four different areas. We have on the top left what looks like a crown. On the bottom left, we have a lion, you know, up on its hind legs in the, you know, aggressive, you know, royal crest position. We have another, up in the top right, this is where it gets tough. It looks like another lion, really.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit different.
Yeah, right, exactly. So we've got two lions on opposite corners, and we have two towers on opposite corners, and the central emblem is the cross. So all of that really is quite important symbolically, right? If it's a cross, then we're talking about a Christian kingdom. Tower represents the castle, the lions, the, you know, the ferocity of the people, the symbol of, you know, the state and so on, right? We have a guy over here with a golden lion on his tunic as well. Bria, go ahead. Oops, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I can't help remembering in lots of, like, the King Richard stories, he has on his shield the same kind of design on the shield, and it's more of, it represents what your family is for.
Yes.
And it kind of like tells you everyone who you are.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Emblems in these times like this, these crests, these family crests and symbols of heraldry were very much an announcement of who you are, what family you belong to, perhaps what dynasty, right? So yeah, these are very representative of your identity. Right, exactly. Okay, good. So we have this calm, composed gaze, this attempt to stand tall. Did you guys notice that about his posture? How would you describe his posture? Right, because this is part of the selfie process. What is this posture? Bria?
Well, I was just kind of comparing this to... Okay, so when you get in trouble with your parents, you try not to... sometimes you were compelled to laugh or to start crying. And I just kind of noticed, I kind of put myself in those shoes because that happens to me, even now. And I can understand that very much. Is trying to not do anything. There's a ton of men looking at you not too happily.
Okay, so you're saying that you really feel, in the way that he's standing, you feel the pressure that he's under, right? It can take a lot of different forms, but you feel the pressure of him trying to contain himself, trying to stay in a certain kind of stance. So it's a little bit rigid. It's a little bit stiff. It's very controlled, very purposeful. There's nothing about this, the way that he's standing, that is slack or unconscious. It's very self-conscious. That would be another descriptor, I think, about the way that he's standing. It's very careful, very composed. Even the foot back is kind of an interesting... I think he's really trying to look regal. And it's not easy to do. And this character over here in red in particular is seems to be kind of like a judge. It's almost like he's on trial for whether or not he can maintain royal posture in the presence of the judges. Because if you're going to be that person, you better be able to handle the pressure, right? And so it's an important moment, right? It's a presentation. He is the center of attention, and he is very careful about what he is showing to the world. Nice slippers with nice little designs on them. Careful tights. Very beautiful tunic with lots of decorations. A crown. It fits him just right. The light is shining down on him. Right, that's kind of an interesting one. Metaphorically, do you get the point about the light shining down on him? This is a cathedral. The architecture of cathedrals is designed in part to manipulate light in order to evoke what? What does the presence of the light in a cathedral evoke? Timothy?
I'm just taking a guess here. It might evoke the presence of God.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what it's for. So yeah, it's the cathedral, especially a Gothic or sort of, there's Gothic elements. It might not be entirely Gothic. A cathedral, especially designed to be really, really high, very grand, very tall, imposing, intimidating type of architecture, with the light coming in through the glass being very beautiful, and kind of a very serene and somber at the same time, evoking all kinds of emotional qualities having to do with worship, religious worship. So yeah, the light comes in and it shines on the boy. You can bet that they set up the platform on the spot where the light would shine on the boy. That's symbolic. There's a lot going on here. Okay, so next time we will take a look at the woman who is presenting him to the audience, and we'll have to scan across the audience and come to an understanding of what their reaction is to the scene. And I will definitely send out an email with selfie instructions. If you want to try to be any character in this painting, you are welcome to do it. In particular, of course, I'm going to invite you to try to consider what it's like to be this person. But you might choose to be somebody else. If you're a girl, you might want to be the queen. If you're a guy, you might want to be one of the knights, or who knows, right? So you might have a different experience of that, depending. Keen, last thoughts.
I was going to say exactly what Alexander just typed in chat. I'm really excited to see why the carpet is scuffed up and, you know, a little bit wrinkled like that. That is not something that's something they would check on and make sure that, you know, make sure the carpet is perfect, really flat like the rest of it. Forward. Why is it like that?
Yeah, that's a little feature. Indeed, in a ceremony that is so perfectly arranged, why didn't the carpet kind of... Why is the carpet a little bit off? Yes, indeed. All right. Well, as usual, your analyses are very insightful, and I enjoy your comments and thoughts. So, have a great weekend, everybody. And I look forward to coming back next week and doing more of this. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye, Mr.
Bye-bye.
Bye.